Well, welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, there's a bar in Chapel Hill called the Crunkleton, and our friend and great author Daniel Wallace says it's the best secret I have. So what is the secret of the success of this bar, and what is the secret that Daniel Wallace is talking about? One of the secrets is it's been named one of the top bars in the whole South, but the owner, Gary Crunkleton, has agreed to come in and talk about some of his secrets. Gary, welcome.
Well, hello, DJ. Thanks for having me. This is an exciting opportunity for me, and it was very kind of Daniel to say those words.
Well, I think he meant them, didn't he? I mean, sometimes he exaggerates a little bit about things, but not about his feelings about things. So.
Well, you know, as a bartender, I can't really talk about how Daniel would know about the bar.
Is there sort of a HIPAA kind of thing with bartender that you— without their permission, you get sign a waiver or something when you come in so the bartender can talk about you?
It's a tacit code, a tacit rule that bartenders can't talk about their guests at the bar. So I think I know who Daniel Wallace is. I see him around town. I see him at Whole Foods and stuff. But I don't know if he's ever been into the bar. Wink, wink.
Well, but I bet he came. He says nice things, and he got paid a pretty penny by Gardens and Guns to write a nice article about you. And it's become a consensus that you're one of the top bars in the South. I mean, you'll accept that one.
Yeah, it's a tremendous honor. We opened the bar. We're on our 6th year. We opened 6 years ago, and people have been very receptive to what we're doing, and it's just a tremendous honor. It's nice to, it's really, really nice to serve guests that appreciate what you're putting out.
What, you know, you made this bar the way you wanted it to be,
right?
And so you had an idea of what it might take to make a bar different and better than a place where you just go and, you know, you go to the bar and get a drink.
Yeah.
What are some of the ingredients that are important to you in providing a special kind of experience for your members and your guests?
I think that's a good question. Thank you. I think it starts with the moment you walk in the door. I think it's important to pay attention to all the details so that what we're doing at the bar is we're selling an experience. It's not just come in and have a drink. It's come in and have a drink and meet some people, be comfortable within the space, shoot some pool if you wish, talk to the bartenders, the staff, meet friends. So it's a culmination of a whole experience once you walk through the door. I think that I've been bartending in Chapel Hill since 1992, and I've worked at a couple great places. One of them was Henderson Street Bar and Grill on Henderson Street. It's not there anymore. The street's there, of course, but the bar's not there. And there, it was kind of like a Cheers. It was kind of like where Harry would have met Sally. It's just it was a great bar, and it was an experience and a neighborhood bar. And I wanted to do the same thing with the Crunkleton, but yet fix it up so that when people came in, they knew. They just understood they were going to get a great experience, and so it's really kind of set up for the older people. Even though we're in a college town, there aren't a lot of undergrads that come. For one, it's expensive; the prices are expensive. But
age wise, many of the undergraduates aren't eligible.
They're not 21. Yeah.
This is an experience designed for middle aged.
Well, I don't know if we limit it to. I mean, we have guests. We're a private club. We have guests We have members and guests that range from 21 up to 86 or so. So we have it's not. But most of the people, you know, a lot of 86-year-olds aren't going out all the time. Most of the people
I'm getting to know that better and better. I'm understanding that better and better. Yeah.
Most of the people that come in are probably, I would say, in their 30s. Our average age is probably 32 or so. A lot of graduate students, a lot of young professionals, lots of just Chapel Hill townies that appreciate a good drink.
All right. But you've already said that's not the drink so much
as it is the
experience that goes – not that the drink's not important, but the overall experience that people are not coming just to get a sip of bourbon.
Right.
Or even a well-mixed special drink.
Yeah, you're right. But the drink has the drink is a big piece of the pie in the whole thing. But they are coming. They're coming because it's not real loud. You don't see a lot of undergrads running around. They're coming. I guess in short, they're coming because it's not a typical college town bar.
Oh, I see what you. So it's a little bit quieter.
Yeah, a little quieter.
And
the chairs are comfortable. The seats are comfortable. A lot of leather.
Listen, you mentioned Cheers a little bit, and all of us have at one time or another seen it and sort of have this image of what a neighborhood gathering place and bar is.
Right.
But there are, in our mind, fashioned by this image, it's almost always the same people. It's a cast that's limited. I mean, people will come in to visit, but so is at Crunkleton's, if I go in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, will there be some people who are almost always there?
We don't have regulars like that. We have regulars. We have people that are there not every day. But we have people that might be there every Tuesday. We have people that might be there every Wednesday. They have their own schedules, or their own routines. But we don't have now. I've served that group, and I don't want to badmouth the group that drinks every day. I don't want to, certainly on the radio, I don't want to badmouth those people. But the ones that are there, I shouldn't say this, but the people that are out drinking every day, I'm not so sure as a bar owner. I want to serve those people.
But because they're thinking they might be drinking a little too much. But maybe they're coming for the experience of being in a place where people know your name and you can talk to them.
There are people like that. But they're not coming in that often. I feel like I painted myself into a corner.
Yeah, you might want to take a break. I tell you what, let's take a break. Gary, get out of this corner. And we'll come back and talk about how wonderful it is to have all these great people who love to come every night. We're visiting with Gary Crunkleton, and we're talking about the Crunkleton, his bar, and learning a lot. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin talking about what has become a famous bar in Chapel Hill, the Crunkleton, thanks to the attention that's been given it in multiple magazines, including Garden and Gun and the News and Observer. Everybody is picking it as the one of the top five, top 10, or the top bar in the region. So I'm curious about it. And Gary Crunkleton is here to talk to me about it. I want to talk some more. I want to talk about liquor in a minute, but before we leave the sort of the overall experience that may attract a customer or a member to the Crunkleton beyond the liquor, and that is sort of the third place, the place where you go where you can have a friendly experience if with nobody else, the bartender, or with you. How do you manage that experience?
I think what I do as a bar, when I'm bartending, when I'm out in the bar, and this is sort of what Daniel Wallace wrote about, is I try to pull people together. If I see someone sitting at the bar, if you were to come in, DJ, and you're sitting at the bar and say, you know, you have ties with Davidson, and say there was a person who was at the bar maybe sitting a few stools away that's from Lake Norman. I might say
Denver,
North Carolina. Yeah. I might say, well, DG, this guy's from Lake Norman to Denver, and you're Davidson. So maybe y'all should talk.
I love this. I mean, this is what I need because I feel like I'm not really a shy person, but to make that leap in an in an area, in a bar or a restaurant or something, where the folks I don't know, and I'm surrounded by people that I would have a connection to.
Almost everybody.
There'd be something we could talk about if we just get started. So the bartender serves a purpose beyond mixing the drinks.
Oh, certainly.
If he can get, instead of having to do all the talking himself with these people, if he can get people talking himself. Yeah. And they really appreciate that.
People like it. And I think that's what Daniel was writing about. I think he called me like a preacher or something doing a sermon, or I'm not sure what exactly he wrote, but I'll try to bring people together. I think that me personally, when I was going to a bar, I have three kids now and a beautiful wife
and a business
and active in church and all these different things, these different aspects of life. But when I was single, I'd go to bars. I wanted to meet people. I wanted to interact with people. I wanted that connectivity. And oftentimes, you don't find it. It's because people are shy and you don't want to talk. Sometimes people at the bars don't want to talk to people. They just want to have a drink and be by themselves. It really kind of depends on what's going on with their day. But as a bartender, I've got a great opportunity to be like the liaison or the bridge between people. And most – all of us, I think, want – social interaction, where we're kind of social beings. We want to talk to other people, and it's great, I think, that the bartender can facilitate that, and that's sort of what I do. There's been times, maybe a handful of times in my 20 years of doing this, that I made a mistake. Maybe somebody didn't want to talk to somebody.
But you can back out of it.
And I can gauge it. I'm getting better at gauging people and sort of figuring out different types of personalities that people have. The bartender is—it's an amazing job. I remember when I was younger, I would think, "Oh, I can't do this forever." And then I might have a friend, and I might go to dinner with a friend, and with their parents, and their mother might say, "Well, so now you're bartending, but what do you want to do when you get
older? When you grow up?"
Yeah, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I'm like, "Well, I don't really know. Right now, the money's good with bartending, and I enjoy it." And I remember when I was thinking about all this stuff. I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but I remember thinking I never want to be a career bartender because the people that I knew that were career bartenders, their kids were always a mess. Their kids were.
I wonder why. I don't know.
Maybe because the father wasn't home enough or something. I don't know. But I just thought, to me, a career bartender equated to kids that are going to have some problems, some issues. And I thought, well, this isn't for me. This is what I want to do. I need to find another career because of that reason. And then I met my wife, and she's a pistol. She's not going to let anything. She's not going to let these kids go astray. She's going to keep them in line and keep them right and keep them close to the church. All this stuff that makes them good. And it's funny to me because when I was thinking about, choosing a career for myself and trying to find, a place to rest my hat for a number of years, I didn't consider, I'm going to have a bride, a wife to help. I thought I was going to do it on my own. It didn't really make sense, but I've got a great wife that helps me do all this stuff and allows the business to really, really flourish, and it has flourished, and very fortunate for that. But I think back to your question, I think it's good. I think it's really good for the bartenders to be able to bring people together. And a long time ago, the public houses, I feel like, in Europe, they would go to church and get right with God at church, and then they would go to their public house, have a pint, and talk about civic things and politics and the community things. So a long time ago, this is probably a couple hundred years ago, the public house was an institution for the community in the town, and I wanted to sort of create a similar kind of environment for the Crunkleton. Now, I didn't want to get into politics because it is a business, and it's unfortunate when you might have somebody do an event, a politician do an event, and then there's always somebody else that's going to go, "Well, why were you're too liberal? You're a liberal bar or something?" Because we had a guy that was going for governor against McCrory. I can't remember his name, but No, you're too liberal.
Walter Dalton, maybe.
Walter Dalton, yeah, who was a great man. Walter Dalton. I loved his name, Walter Dalton. He was a great man. I met him. He came to the bar. We did a fundraiser for him. But I think it ruffled some feathers with some people.
Nobody argues with you having your own political opinions and being even willing to discuss them in appropriate circumstances at the bar with consideration to all and all of that.
Yeah.
But when you use what somebody believes is their club or their third place to attack their values in a sense.
To associate with, their identity. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a topic for another time. I want to when your regulars come in, you know whether or not they want to meet anybody else. And they probably have their friends there that they look forward to talking to and maybe don't want to be bothered with new people. Is that right?
I think you're right. It happened just the other day. I have a lot of business owners, we all know each other. And I had some friends that were business owners, local business owners, in on Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and a couple of them owned restaurants, so they were just sort of plotting out some menu items for Thanksgiving and for their home, not at their businesses, and so they were there were five local business owners there, and Durham too, Chapel Hill and Durham. And we were all just sitting around drinking whiskey, and I was serving them, and they were drinking whiskey, and just talking about the good old days and how business is going and all that. And then a guy came in from the hospital who's an administrative staff at the hospital, UNC Hospital, and he knows all the businesses associated with all five of them. And he said, "What's going on? Are y'all price fixing?" Anyway, I got a kick. I got a kick at it. So for those guys, when they come to the bar, like you sort of know. They don't want to be bothered.
They've got their own group.
Yeah, they got their own group. And they don't want me to broadcast. Hey, this is so and so that owns so and so, because they kind of want their anonymity. This is not an escape, so to speak, but they come to this place to relax and not be bothered. But there are other people. Certainly, there's a lot of single people out there, in their 30s, that are looking to meet other people. You know, there's groups of girls that are all single, beautiful girls that might come out, and nice girls that might come out and want to meet some guys, and vice versa. There's some great guys out there that want to meet some great women, and the bar is a good place to do that. At our bar, fortunately, it's a safe place to do it, and the bar staff, we're not referees or judges or anything, but we kind of oversee to make sure everything is going smoothly and when they meet and everything's going appropriately. But I love matchmaking.
Have you got some,
any results?
Yeah. Well, I mean, have you been to some weddings or you've been, got some,
well, I mean, I was,
nieces
I was,
and nephews that.
I was able to marry a couple.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
They asked me to be their officiant or something, and it's kind of a funny story. They wanted me to do it, and I was honored to do it. And they said, "Well, just go online and become a minister." And so I went and I looked online to do that, and I thought, "Oh gosh, you know, I'm having a tough time on my own, keeping my own Christian path going. I don't want to mix up this other monkey wrench thing." So I asked my minister at UPC, Bob Dunham, about it. And he says, "Well, let me sit in and I'll sign the document." And then I was the official.
What a nice thing for him to do.
Yeah, it was very nice for him to do. But I have done that. And we've had some couples get engaged at the bar. We haven't done a wedding at the bar. But it's nice to do that, to be that element. It's a small little element, nice to be that small little element of bringing people together. And TG, I don't know if you know, but if you're 27 and up, guy or girl in a college town, it's tough to meet people. It's tough for.
Why is that? Why?
Well, I think the guys, and I know when I was single. Which is a big part of the Crunkleton Bar. When I was single, I would go to 411 West,
because
that was a great place to meet people of my age. And I would go there, and I might see some people that I might be interested in talking to them or talking to them. And then I might see a guy sitting right next to me eating a bowl of pasta, and I'm hungry because I'm a big guy. I like to eat. So then I might order a bowl of pasta while I'm trying to figure out, you know, to whom I'm going to speak. And next thing you know, I eat the pasta. I'm full. And I go, well, I didn't meet anybody tonight. I didn't meet a pretty girl tonight. But my belly's full. I'll go home and try tomorrow. So I don't want to veer off too far away. But when I set the Crunkleton up, I didn't want food because I wanted to create a place where older people could meet other older people. Because I think in this town, if you're 27 and up, you know, if you're in your 30s and up, the guys are looking at the younger girls, the ones that are the 22-year-old, and they're thinking, oh, that person, DG, it's a whole different realm
out there. Yeah, yeah.
They're looking at this. They're thinking, oh, I'd like to meet this 22-year-old girl or whatever. It's a college town. And the 22-year-old girls aren't interested in these older guys, which is good, I guess. Meanwhile, that 27-year-old's kind of getting overlooked. I think that's what's happening. And then vice versa for the women. The women are looking for the 30-year-old guy, and which is a nice guy, but the 30-year-old guy might be interested in the 25-year-old or whatever. So it's just tough. I hear people often in this town talk about how hard it is. Women and men talk about how hard it is to meet other people.
There would be other. I mean, you wouldn't. This one of the things that you framed your business around is providing an answer to that dilemma for people. I mean, it's not the sole reason to be there, but it is one of the reasons.
I think
to
so.
Be that.
I think you're right. I think so. All of this comes. I didn't plan on talking about this part of it, but all of this comes not because it's a business and I see it as an opportunity to make money. You know, I could sell a drink to somebody, or not that at all. It's just that I'm 47 now, and I met Megan, my wife, in my late 30s. But prior to that, I wasn't alone, but it was just hard for me to meet the right person.
Wow.
And I found Megan late in my life. I wasn't married again. Her mom used to think that I'd been married before because it was 37 and not in a relationship. But I wasn't married but I remember, I remember being 30 and going to a bar and trying to meet someone and it not happening and feeling lonely and then wishing I had a social, more of a social environment, so that I could.
Yeah,
I could have more fun.
Well, we do need to take a break, but then I mean, you're just unleashing all of these observations that I want to make. Nobody wants to hear it from me. They want to hear it from Gary about it. But you're making me think that there are a lot of us who are lonely, you know, and it's not just the people looking for a date or wife or husband or, you know, long-term relationship. They're people who are stuck without as full a complement of friends as they would like. And so I love the idea that one of the things that you're doing is giving those of us an opportunity to come and, you know, go have one of your drinks and maybe meet somebody.
Can I add before we break?
Yeah.
We opened for the holidays. We're open for Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I had Thanksgiving dinner with my family. My mother-in-law and her family, there's 15 of us there. And they asked, well, why didn't you close the bar today? Why are you going to open on Thanksgiving? And they said, certainly, being closed one day isn't going to break the business. You know, you're going to miss out on $800 or whatever. That's not going to hurt the business. And what I told them was, certainly, yeah, you're right. $800 ain't going to break the business. But on Thanksgiving, there are people that want to get out and they want right. to, and we're providing that. And it's really, I enjoy working the holidays because I get to talk to these people when they're, when they want to talk.
When they're more appreciative than ever.
Yeah, and they want to talk.
A family type thing.
They want to have real conversation.
I'm glad you added that.
Yeah.
That's real important. We do have to take a break. We're going to come back. We're talking to Gary Crunkleton about his bar, the Crunkleton. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're visiting with Gary Crunkleton. We're talking about his bar, and enough about the bar. Let's talk about what the products are.
How about it?
And one of the things that I really got excited about was when you I heard you talking about how these different liquors are made and the different results. And here's the memorable line from the talk that, my friends think Maker's Mark bourbon is that, you know, that's the end of all bourbons, and with good reason. They like it. It's a good bourbon. And how am I going to say this without putting words into your mouth? But you just said, from your point of view, there are, and what you've learned, know and learned and tasted over a lifetime, a professional lifetime of examining these things and testing them, that there are some bourbons that are a lot better.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's hard, DJ. It's I'm not going to call it a mistake, but it's hard to know exactly what you like unless you're able. Well, first of all, let me say, like whatever you wish.
With wines and beers,
whatever
and Pepsis and Cokes and different kind of, we do like different things. That's great. All right, so put that on the table. But nevertheless, some are better than others.
Right. But what I like to advocate is when I do tastings, and you're referring to a tasting we did on bourbon a few months back. So you can like whatever you like, but I think it's important that you know why you like what you like. So what I try to do in these tastings is I put a broad range of different types of mash bills and different types of bourbons.
I was sort of hoping you were going to do that today.
Sorry to interrupt. But I try to put a varying amount of different types of spirits out there and let people taste so they can decide. And then I tell them why this tastes this way, why that tastes that way. And then hopefully they can decide or discern why they like something. With Maker's Mark, it's a weeded bourbon, and
that means nothing to me.
Yeah, and that's common. A lot of people don't really know what weeded bourbons mean. But there's generally like three mash bills. There's a traditional mash bill, a weeded mash.
Again, a mash bill doesn't mean anything to me. A mash bill.
All right. Okay. Let me back up then. So when you make liquor, you get a grain. You can also make liquor with fruit. You can make it out of vegetables. Mm-hmm. You can use grains. But let's look at, say, bourbon. So bourbon comes from corn, which is a grain, rye, which is a grain, wheat, which is a grain, and barley.
The four in similar proportions?
They mix them all up. Bourbon has to have at least 51% corn. So if you think you had a gallon jug, put at least 51% of corn grain in that gallon jug, and then it'll have about 10% barley, 15% barley. It'll range. And then, so add that to the jug, and then add about 30, whatever's left of rye. 30%, 20%, whatever's left of rye, that's one mash bill. That's called a traditional mash bill.
A mash bill being that's the composition of the mash.
Yeah, that's the mash. The mash is the grains that make the mash. Some people call it a distiller's brew or distiller's beer. So there's the weeded bourbon mash bill, which will have at least 51% corn, at least. Now, it could have 60, 70, but it has to have at least 51%. And then they'll take out the rye grain. They won't use rye grain, and they'll add wheat, and then they'll still have their 10-15% barley. So that's the weeded mash bill. And then the traditional mash bill is the one I just spoke of with the corn, rye, and barley. And then there's a high rye mash bill, which is at least 51% corn, a smaller percent of barley, and then a greater percent of well, not greater in more than 51, but maybe 35% of rye grain. So if you think about, so then you think, okay, what does that mean?
Let me just say, here's what I can grasp hold of, and that is, if it's bourbon, there's going to be a variety, but all of them have at least a lot of corn, 50%
corn. Yeah, you have to have at least
51%. And so that the rest of the 49% is made up of the four grains, including corn.
Yeah.
You put a little more corn, yeah, a little more rye, a little more barley, and some wheat. And that that some of the basic difference comes from how that mixture is varied.
Right.
And at the starting out at the mash level, that is, before you even start the fermenting process.
Before you even start the fermentation process, that's exactly right. And then when you ferment, you add the yeast, and the yeast probably gives it, in my opinion, probably gives it 15% of its flavor.
Oh, wow. So there'd be different kinds
of yeast. There's different types of yeast. And that adds a little bit of flavor to it. The popular bourbon right now is Pappy Van Winkle. And the bouquet on it is wonderful. It's amazing. It doesn't even smell like a bourbon. The flavor of it is different than the bouquet. But the bouquet, I believe, comes from the yeast. I think what makes Pappy so good, and it's a wheated bourbon, but I think what makes Pappy so good, beyond the aging it does, is the particular yeast they use. And that yeast, these different distilleries and different brands, they keep all that proprietary.
But the yeast is just part of the fermentation process. It's after that, it's all over, right? I mean, the yeast.
Right. You throw the yeast into the mash bill or the distiller's brew, and the yeast. Well, this is all natural. The yeast will eat the sugars that comes from the grain.
No extra sugars added in.
In moonshine, they do.
In bourbon, in commercial bourbon.
But
you got to put some water in there.
No extra sugars. They have the water in the mash bill. Yeah, they use the water. And in Kentucky, they talk about the limestone shelf
that
filters out the water. And that's why the Kentucky bourbon is so good, because of the limestone shelf and their geography. But the yeast will eat the sugars, and it'll create alcohol. So then you have, and you can see it fermenting, you know, the bubbles coming up, the alcohol being made, because the yeast eats the sugars, and it makes CO2 and alcohol. So the CO2 bubbles are coming up, and you can see it fermenting. And then they take that batch, or mash bill, or distillery's brew, whatever you want to call it, and they distill it. And during distillation, they're separating the water from the alcohol. They're bringing the alcohol out. And the alcohol will pick up.
Now, they've thrown away all the wheat and the grain and the corn. That's all.
That's all discarded. That's all discarded.
Filter that out.
They filter that out. Yeah, they filter that out, and that's run through a stripper. They put it in a stripper, mm-hmm. which is a different type of steel. And then after they get the alcohol out, they'll put that alcohol in another steel, a different steel, a pot steel, and it'll still it to bring the good alcohol out. And you're still not done there. They have heads, tails, and heart. So if you have, say, a gallon of alcohol, out of that gallon, about a third of its heads, a third of its tails, and a third of its heart.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, it's going to get technical, but there's good alcohols and bad alcohols. And what we want to drink is ethyl alcohol.
And is that what you're calling the heart alcohol?
Yeah, yeah.
And the rest of it's?
The rest of it, which
is good, good alcohol, but not good to drink, and not good for the beverage.
They call it congeners, and it could be.
Why is it bad? I mean, alcohol is alcohol. It is. I mean, it's not.
Alcohol is alcohol, but there's different types. There's isopropyl alcohol, there's acetone, there's ethyl alcohol, methyl alcohol. There's all different types of alcohol. And
only one of them can be the basis for bourbon? Only one of them is the heart alcohol?
Well, that's a tough question. That's a tough question. Ideally, no, that all the spirits, ethyl alcohol is what we're looking for. That's what we're trying to get. And ideally, ethyl alcohol would be all that we had. But some distilleries, and the reason why you might pay $10 for a bottle of vodka versus, I'm talking about vodka now, but we could still do it for bourbon. The reason why you might pay $10 for a bottle of vodka versus $50 for a bottle of vodka is the $10 bottle of vodka probably has different types of alcohols in it.
Extras that aren't as good as the pure.
Yeah. Whereas the $50 bottle probably has mostly ethyl alcohol in it,
okay.
which is
I tell you what, we got to take a quick break, okay. And then we got to come back and really hone in on how bourbons are different.
Okay.
Because I got too interested in what you're talking about. We're visiting with Gary Coughlin. We're talking about liquor in connection with the celebration of his bar, and he and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, Gary Crumpleton of the Crumpleton, and I are talking about liquor. And he's, you got to stick with us because it's kind of complicated how you make bourbon, but you're teaching us or telling us how they do it.
It is complicated. Chemists do it. So right there, you know it's going to be complicated. It's not the layperson doing it. So, yeah, there's a whole process to it, starting with the mash bill, the different grains that we use, and then the aging process and the distillation. All of that stuff affects what we put in our mouth, what we drink. So, DG, you asked about particular brands earlier, like the Maker's Mark. You have friends that love Maker's Mark, and it's great that they love Maker's Mark. But I think it's important that they know why they like Maker's Mark. It's a weeded bourbon. If you put it to a
which
did,
means it's got a lot more wheat,
a lot
than
more
another,
wheat than the rye. And it's one out there, you all out in radio land, if you think about bread, like what wheat bread tastes like versus cornbread versus rye bread or a bread that might have a lot of barley in it, you could sort of get an idea of the different flavors of the grains. And rye bread has a lot of spiciness and complexity and pepperness. Where wheat doesn't really taste like much of anything.
All right, well, so since we're getting to the end, I'm going to reframe this. And so you're saying that a lot of us might like Maker's Mark, just the same as a lot of us might like white bread because it's got a lot of wheat in it and it tastes good. But you say, you're eating white bread, you're not eating rye or some complex or multigrain bread.
Yeah.
I mean, is that sort of?
So there's nothing wrong with
my liking white bread, but I might be missing a richer experience.
Right, exactly right.
What's your latest favorite?
Right now, the one that's really popular is the Buffalo Trace Antique Collections. There's four different spirits in that. And then also the Pappy Van Winkles are really, really popular. And we're one of the few bars that has it. We have the 10, 12, 15, 20, and 23 year.
And so if I come in and say, okay, Gary, I'm neutral. I've got this Maker's Mark prejudice. What are you going to do? You're going to give me a little bit of Maker's Mark?
I think what I'm going to do, DG, is I'm going to pour a little bit of Maker's Mark, and then I'm going to pour some Larceny bourbon from Heaven Hill. It's a wheated bourbon. And then I'm going to pour some Jefferson's bourbon, and I'm going to let you taste, and then probably a little bit of Pappy Van Winkle. And I'm going to let you taste the wheated bourbons and William LaRue Weller, Buffalo Trace.
So we're going to focus on that first to see which one of the wheated bourbons I like.
Right,
then,
right.
Once I pick that, you're going to lead me to a more
then
complex
Then we're going to go to something more complex. We'll do a traditional mash bill. The Jim Beam Black, the aged 8 years, that's a great value.
That's not bourbon. A real expensive bourbon.
No, it's $28.
But it's delicious. That's a good bourbon.
It's a great bourbon. So we'll try some traditional blend bourbons. And then after we do that, we'll move into the high rye bourbons, like Four Roses. Everything they make, Four Roses makes, is a high rye bourbon. And what you're going to get, just from talking about this, without even tasting it, we know that we're going to get more spiciness and peppery, as we progress from the wheated bourbons up to the high rye bourbons. But it doesn't stop there. They even make rye whiskeys that are mostly 51% rye. So if you really like
that, doesn't qualify as bourbon.
No, it's not bourbon. But if you really like that spiciness and complexity that's found in rye, you're probably going to like rye whiskey. Now, switching that to scotch, if you're a scotch person, you really enjoy scotch, then your scotch is, it's kind of like the Spirit of Kings. It's a great whiskey because it has so much complexity, because there's so much going on. And if you like scotch, you're probably going to like rye whiskeys because of the complexity and what's going on. Now, back to the wheated bourbons. The wheated bourbons don't have much flavor to them. You might get the walnuts and the pecans and maybe some honey from the barrel aging. Well. And I think in my experience as a bartender and a drinker, because I like to drink it, whatever I put in my mouth, I want more complexity. Whatever I, when I'm
so
drinking.
And that would be develop as you, as
yeah,
you're a professional.
I think your palate.
Ellie,
yeah.
I mean, we're just getting started and time's up. I mean, it's just, and I apologize to those of you who are listening for not, Gary has much more to teach us. And if we'd be nice to him, maybe we can persuade him to come back. He's getting ready to go to Kentucky with his staff to examine a part of the operation of bourbon distilleries and the storage, and that'll make a nice report. But in the meantime, Gary, thanks for sharing.
DG, thank you.
Learning with
thank
us.
You.
Thanks to you for listening. This is DG Martin, who's talking. I'll be back here before you know it.